From DLA Piper, this is the Beyond the Curve podcast. In this episode, DLA Piper antitrust partners John Hamill, David Hamilton, David Bamberger, and Brian Boyle share an overview of the firm's antitrust practice and latest trends and issues in areas including merger control, unfair competition, and the use of artificial intelligence.
Hello, everybody. My name is David Hamilton. I'm an antitrust partner in the Baltimore office of DLA Piper. We're very happy and excited to talk to you about our practice as it relates to the firm's clients and issues that we see in our practice on a daily basis. I'm first going to introduce everybody who is going to be speaking, beginning with John Hamill, the chair of the antitrust practice, and then we'll get started on our topics.
Thanks, David. This is John Hamill. I am sitting here today in our offices in Chicago. Behind me is the Chicago River. I've been working in this field for the better part of three decades. Very happy to be talking to you from our firm.
Brian?
Hi, David. It's great to be here with you to talk about our practice and share some of the things we're seeing on a daily basis. A partner in our Philadelphia office, and look forward to talking to you about our merger control side of our antitrust practice and transactional side and what we're seeing there.
And David?
This is David Bamberger, and I'm a partner in the Washington, D.C. office. I've been practicing in the antitrust field for several decades, and I'm very happy to be here with the team today.
That's great. Thank you. So, John, we're going to start with you. You're the chair of the practice. You have the big picture of what our practice looks like and things that people are tackling and addressing on behalf of clients and for other purposes around the firm. And if you can talk about our international practice at all, please do so.
Well, let me start with talking a little bit about the firm itself. DLA Piper has north of 90 offices around the globe. In the United States alone, we have about 1,600 lawyers, and we are approaching about 5,000 lawyers around the planet. That translates into us having sophisticated legal practices in 40 countries. As for our antitrust practice, stateside, we run coast to coast. We have the full range of antitrust and competition law services. We are ranked in Chambers and Legal 500. We have centers of gravities on both coasts, New York, California. I'm here in Chicago. We have a big presence in D.C. We do the full gamut, merger control, civil defense, cartel, white-collar work, investigative work, regulatory work, and the full range, of course, of counseling. Around the globe, quite similarly, we run the full service of antitrust and competition law capabilities. Again, investigations, M&A work, compliance work, civil litigation, cartel enforcement, defense, consumer protection, just what you would expect from a firm of our sophistication and our size. We like to think of ourselves as a trusted partner with our clients in dealing with global antitrust issues. And again, the full range of services are there. Let me pause there, David, because I could talk really all day about what we're doing. But we do view ourselves, and we are one of the few firms on the global platform that can faithfully say that we are one firm as we approach the market.
So, John, talk a little bit about our agnostic treatment or geography and how we might team cases with associates of counsel and partners, regardless of where they are.
Yeah, it's a great point, and it's all the truer today in the virtual world that we live in. Let me start by saying that we can draw from our own experiences first. I'm sitting here in Chicago, but I have personally worked on matters in this field with lawyers throughout the planet. Speaking personally, I've had matters with lawyers from Italy, from England, throughout the U.S., and those are integrated teams. It's seamless. We work together closely. Time zones don't matter. Technology, of course, allows us to do this quite capably, but we also make it a point to gather together physically multiple times a year. We know each other. We get to know each other. We make it a point to do that. So it becomes this one firm mentality. It's really central to the way that we operate.
That's great. And with respect to our international practice, you have a counterpart, do you not?
Two counterparts. In fact, there are structures that we try to put in place. There's Leon Korsten and there's Nate Bush. Those are the global co-chairs of the practice. But again, I think of us more as a roundtable. It's a coordinated group. We have structures and organizations to try to ensure that we can provide client service. but we're teams. We construct teams to go out to the market and place the best resources where they can be used. So even though we give titles and we make sure that we can be responsive, we are here to provide the best service and to get the best people where they need to be.
And last question for you, although the focus here is just antitrust, we also have defined ourselves as competition lawyers, which may include things, particularly for litigation, broader than just antitrust issues. Could you talk about that just a bit?
Early on in my career, doing a number of things that felt like antitrust work, but fell under different causes of action in the litigation sphere. A couple of examples, I litigated a number of RICO cases early on, which I felt like they were pricing disputes, but in RICO clothing. And then shifted a bit in the early telecom wars and did a number of competition disputes under the 1996 Telecom Act. And then shifted again to trade secrets type matters and unfair competition matters. And from that, I developed a view, and then I learned that folks such as yourself and the others on our podcast here had similar career paths where it became rather obvious that these different areas of law all called for the same skill sets. They all called for the same type of evidence, and they all drew from really the same experts, the same fields of expertise. So over the ensuing years, we saw this label of competition law becoming kind of engrossed over the field. And then the regulators themselves, they wear many hats, our federal regulators and our state regulators. FTC, it deals not just with antitrust and the purer economic competition issues. It deals with consumer protection issues. It deals with unfair trade practices. So all of those things fall into the gamut of what we think of as antitrust and competition law. We don't want to just have ourselves locked into a narrower view of only enforcing the Sherman Act and the Clayton Act and the Robinson-Patman Act.
That's great. Thank you. Brian, I'm going to turn to you now. You and I have overlapped in a number of matters since I joined the firm, but your practice is different in mine in that you are far more active in merger and merger control and transactional matters than I am. Can you talk about the firm's practice in those areas and what you're doing?
Yeah, sure. I'd love to. First of all, there are, of course, a lot of antitrust practices in the market that have some activity in merger control, but I think ours really stands out in a couple of ways. The first is what I would describe as the sophistication of the practice. And of course, that starts with having a tremendous team that has decades of experience in private practice, but also in government. But more than that, DLA Piper has led the global M&A league tables for 14 straight years. And that means that we see year in and year out just a tremendous volume of M&A transactions. And we derive tremendous insight and perspective from that, that frankly is hard to replicate. John talked a little bit about the scale of our practice and our global presence. That really comes into play in a very significant way in the merger control world. We have not just folks on the ground here in the U.S. in the major commercial centers, but we often are coordinating sophisticated global transactions that have filing requirements and potential risks in multiple jurisdictions around the world. We are able to a very great extent to handle that capably entirely within DLA without having to use other firms in other markets, which I think creates tremendous value for our clients and enables us to really coordinate the process and deliver results in a way that many others can't. We, of course, have teams that are fantastic in London and Brussels, but it doesn't stop there. We have very capable antitrust, competition, merger control lawyers in Sao Paulo and Mexico City and Singapore and in South Africa and in the Nordics and on and on. So we're able to bring all of those resources together in a really seamless and coordinated way for clients and deliver some really great results.
That's great. Thanks. And on the domestic side, maybe for antitrust lawyers only, it's been exciting in the way things have shaped out from a regulatory perspective in the last year or so. Do you want to talk about the new merger guidelines and the impact generally on our practices and our clients?
Yeah, sure. Look, we're in the midst of two important changes on the merger control front. So the first is the change in the merger control guidelines, which were recently finalized. And that refers to the substantive standard by which the agencies say that they will evaluate mergers and acquisitions. But I think what's important, there's a couple of headlines that are important for folks to understand. The first is that these new guidelines really, in my view, formalize the aggressive and, for better or for worse, creative approaches that the antitrust agencies have been taking to merger analysis under the Biden administration and under the current leadership of the agencies. So they are very significant in the sense of documenting the departure from the way things have been in the past, but it's not as though it's brand new today. These are really issues that we've been dealing with in recent years and dealing with successfully. And the reason why that matters is because the press coverage and the headlines that a lot of people are familiar with and the perception that many people have is that the agencies are increasingly anti-merger, though that's true in many respects. It also means that deals can still happen. There is still very much a playbook for how to do this, how to get deals through. It may take more creativity, more advanced planning than in the past, particularly for industries like private equity, for example, that are more in the crosshairs now than they have been in recent years. But it's absolutely still possible to get deals through, even deals that pose a lot of challenges. Very quickly, the other big change that's going on and that we're living through is the proposed changes at this point to the procedural rules, if you will, to the Hart-Scott-Rodino rules, which relates to the pre-merger notification filings that have to be made in the U.S. The Federal Trade Commission has proposed really dramatic changes to those rules that would make filings, frankly, much more onerous, much more time-consuming, result in much greater information being disclosed. But I think one of the upshots there is that the changes in many ways would make the U.S. filings look a lot more like filings in the European Union and in other jurisdictions around the world. In some ways, U.S. filings will be even more onerous than what we see in other parts of the world. But that experience that I talked about a few minutes ago in global transactions, in guiding clients through the challenges of merger clearance in lots of different places around the world, I think gives us a really excellent perspective on what things are likely to look like in the U.S. and will help us be prepared for that when these rules get finalized.
Terrific. Thanks. And I know one other area that you've been active in is consumer protection. Would you talk a little bit about our firm's practice in that area and how we relate to our colleagues and the work that you've been doing?
Sure. I think John's comments a few minutes ago on that front were really important. That is that the overlap between traditional competition issues, antitrust issues, strictly speaking, and consumer protection, and certainly in the view of the agencies, like in the Federal Trade Commission and the state's attorneys general, they view these issues as increasingly interrelated. And we see that in the positions that they're taking in cases and the guidance that they're putting out. They see a tremendous amount of overlap. So that means that in practice, the issues that our clients are encountering more and more have dimensions of both traditional antitrust and consumer protection. And so we have a really robust practice here of defending clients in Federal Trade Commission investigations by their Bureau of Consumer Protection. This really runs the gamut in terms of the types of investigations under that umbrella and includes some really significant high-profile national investigations and investigations that have global components. And I think important to know there is a theme that we've talked about a few times here of coordination and seamlessness doesn't just stop within our antitrust and competition group, because in areas like consumer protection and in antitrust, there's a lot of overlap with other areas of our firm. So we have tremendous capabilities and people with a lot of great experience, for example, litigating class actions related to consumer protection issues. So we're able to really seamlessly integrate those capabilities, take the perspective of myself and others here who day in, day out are dealing with the Federal Trade Commission's and the Department of Justice, combine that with our class action expertise, combine that with our really first-rate state attorney general specialists, and provide really comprehensive solutions on these problems.
And you also work with our advertising specialty lawyers, true?
Absolutely. It's a fully integrated practice from counseling and planning, advertising campaigns, all the way through to when, unfortunately, government comes knocking, making sure that our clients are protected.
That's great. Thank you. David Bamberger, I'm going to turn to you now. Ever since I've been practicing antitrust law, including at other firms, I've known you as the solid rock of the antitrust litigation practice at DLA Piper. Can you talk about what we do in the way of criminal and civil litigation?
Sure, I'd be glad to. Let me just see if I can give you a thumbnail sketch of what our antitrust litigators do, but also talk about what makes our team stand out from many others. Our antitrust litigation practice really runs the gamut. We litigate civil antitrust cases all over the U.S., dealing with all kinds of issues. Price fixing, of course, or alleged price fixing, I should say, but also more complex, that is, legally complex issues such as boycotts, monopolization, etc. Our portfolio also includes, importantly, defending class actions, which is an area where we have extensive experience. We also have a robust criminal defense practice, which is led by former DOJ officials. And they handle investigations, negotiations with the agencies, litigation in court, of course. And we've got particularly extensive experience defending against charges of cartel conduct, not just here in the U.S., but also elsewhere. Now, let me just mention a few ways in which we think our antitrust litigation practice distinguishes itself from some of the others out there. First of all, we pride ourselves on training our litigators to know how to be strong advocates in court who can take cases to trial and win them. By the same token, we're always mindful that the best outcome for the client could be a negotiated settlement or some form of alternative dispute resolution. And our clients appreciate the thoughtful approach that we take, laying out for them their options. Additionally, another real differentiator that we have from many other firms is the collaborative relationship between our U.S. team and our competition colleagues in other countries. And that's been mentioned already by John and by Brian. So we're really operating as a single team globally, including not just the Americas and the EU, but Asia, Australia, really all over the planet. And that is really important and beneficial for our clients. Unlike many large firms, we've actually been a global firm for over 20 years. So we've worked out a lot of the kinks that many other firms, frankly, struggle with. And we can provide comprehensive antitrust competition advice in a seamless way that way. Maybe one final point is just as a matter of firm culture, and this is as true in the antitrust practice as it is everywhere else within the firm, we really consider it vital to help clients see around the corners and over the horizon to anticipate new or different types of antitrust risks that they might encounter, whether that be the interface between antitrust and artificial intelligence, or between antitrust law and labor markets. We are always trying to be ahead of the game, and that's just part of the firm culture.
That's great. I'm going to pick up on something that you mentioned and then ask you a question on a topic that John mentioned, but you talked about DLA Piper having criminal litigators and civil litigators. Our listeners might be interested in what we call parallel investigations and how we work together across the spectrum.
Sure. I mean, it's no secret that in the antitrust world, it is frequently the case that there is some indication of an investigation of a particular industry that the Department of Justice Antitrust Division is looking into certain issues. And it's no secret that once there is even a hint of that, there is a very robust antitrust plaintiffs bar that sometimes it almost seems miraculous within a day or two of an indication of a criminal investigation, there are filings of sometimes multiple civil cases. So when we become aware of such situations, either in advance of some announcement or indication of an investigation or as a result of it, we are positioned to put together teams of both civil and criminal litigators to ensure that, number one, the client's interests are fully protected, but also to make sure that whatever is going on the one side is in coordination with and in support of what's going on the other in terms of defending the clients.
Last question for you. John mentioned unfair competition, and that is both a federal concept and a state law concept. And we are practicing both in state courts and federal courts and working on state and federal unfair competition. But what's been your experience in the differences among states on how they treat competition, particularly if they have unfair competition statutes?
Yeah, we have 50 states in the country, and each one of them has its own array of state statutes. Some are unfair competition statutes, some deceptive trade practices acts. There's a whole panoply of state laws. They do differ in some material respects, one from another. And in those cases, which we litigate all the time, it's important to be able to distinguish among the statutes to make sure that all the appropriate defenses are asserted. At the same time, under federal law, the Federal Trade Commission pursues cases based on the notion of unfair competition. And frankly, in recent years, the FTC has made it known that they intend to enhance that enforcement effort to the extent that it goes beyond the requirements and prohibitions of the antitrust laws themselves. And unfair competition will be determined on a case-by-case basis. So we are well familiar with the case law in the federal realm of unfair competition. And many times it is concentric with, if you will, state unfair competition laws. And then sometimes there are material differences. But we've experienced it all and are well prepared to defend any case on that concept.
Thank you. So for the practice at DLA Piper, I'll try to answer the question of why is antitrust so hot right now? And it really brings together the question about how economists and the economy and the law profession and politics converge. I'll give you the short version, and that is probably around 2015 or 2016, academics and think tanks started to publish and speak about the ways that they thought that antitrust law was insufficient and ways to change it. In particular, the focus was on big tech, and privacy was often, at that point in time, the first and foremost issue, and it became the proxy for reviewing big tech as anti-competitive. And if you fast forward to the presidential election in 2020, the Biden administration, through an executive order that it issued in July of 2021, issued a very broad-based mandate for industry and practices and skills issues that were relevant to the world of antitrust. The president also made some very important appointments. He brought Tim Wu from Columbia University into his office to draft the executive order. He appointed Jonathan Cantor to the Department of Justice, heading up antitrust. And Lina Khan originally was appointed to the Federal Trade Commission. And then right after she was appointed, she was made the chair of the Federal Trade Commission. There were also some controversial matters that occurred about the same time. We also had a very active Senate subcommittee that was focused on competition and antitrust and competition issues. Very broad agenda. Unfortunately, because it's Congress, not much has happened. There have been hundreds of hearings on one particular bill, but really the only significant bill that passed is a bill that allowed state antitrust enforcers to keep their cases in their state court. So nonetheless, the Department of Justice and the FTC began to become active on behalf of the Biden administration and engage in both litigation and rulemaking practices, and have proposed changes to things like non-competes, to information exchanges, to how unfair competition is defined, as Brian mentioned, changes to mergers and acquisitions rules. And there was also a focus on particular industries. Initially, there were four industries that were as part of the target for the Biden administration: healthcare, pharma, big agricultural, and the tech industries. But today, as we are 2.5+ years after the Biden administration issued its executive order, we are in the midst of cases being litigated against big tech and other companies. The rulemaking process goes on, likely will be the subject of many litigation challenges. And then, as David Bamberger mentioned, the recent advent of artificial intelligence has prompted new interest in regulating price-fixing algorithms. So a lot has been happening. There's been some reaction from the congressional side that has been helpful in defining where we are. I think for now, what we see are cases being filed in court to test rules and to advance the legal thinking on behalf of the agencies. And as well, some private litigation is going to shape the future. But it's a good time to be an antitrust lawyer because there's something new and exciting happening every day. So for the last thing, I'll just turn it over to everybody. And as David Bamberger said, we are good at trying to look around the corners for things that we see on behalf of our practices and our clients. Let me kick it to John to ask you the question. What are you seeing? What are you looking around the corner and seeing for the practice and our clients?
There's that old adage that the more things change, the more they stay the same. I was just listening to what you were just going through, and I was thinking back to 1890 was when the Sherman Act was passed, and not quite then Justice Louis Brandeis, probably before he was Justice Brandeis, wrote Other People's Money in 1914 or 1915 or somewhere around then, and wrote his treatises that I think Lena Khan then adopted into her law review article that then became a article in the Atlantic and then ultimately perhaps got used into some of the blueprints that led to some of the changes at the FTC. And so we went from 1890 to 1914 and ideas then to 2018 to 2020. So I think maybe the way to look forward is to look what was going on 100 years ago and apply what was going on then to what's coming next. That's my outlook. The more they change, the more they stay the same.
Brian, I'll toss you one and then be interested in your own observations. But in addition to the horizontal and vertical merger guidelines, there's talk about proposing new guidelines for the banking industry. How do you see that playing out? And also interested in what you're looking at around the corner.
Well, I'm skeptical that anything that requires congressional involvement is going to get done anytime soon. I think the reason why we've seen the biggest changes that we have come out in this area, for example, the merger guidelines, the proposed changes to the Hart-Scott-Rodino rules, the FTC's proposal to ban non-competes, the countless rules that the FTC has promulgated on the consumer protection side in recent years. The reason we're seeing all that is because Congress doesn't need to be involved. The agencies have been able to act without that. So if they could find a way under existing authority to achieve some of their policy objectives with respect to the banking industry, then perhaps. But so far, I'm unconvinced because it seems to me that Congress is going to need to be involved to make significant changes there. In terms of what else I'm seeing, I think maybe somewhat to John Hamill's point, something that we've seen over time, if you look back over the history of antitrust enforcement, antitrust has really gone through eras. There are eras of increased enforcement and decreased enforcement. It sort of ebbs and flows and does so somewhat in tandem with the way that scholarship is progressing and public opinion evolves. And I think we are still at the beginning of an era of increased enforcement. I think there's a lot that we can learn, to John's point, about looking back at prior eras. I think one of the lessons is that the industries that haven't been in the spotlight so far or that just starting to be in the spotlight shouldn't take comfort in that. I think it's really important to not look at these issues and think, oh, well, that's just a problem for big tech, right? Or that's just a problem for some other industry. I think it's really important to understand that the antitrust agencies and the plaintiffs bar have aspirations and views that are much broader than that. And I think that's true on the micro level too for private equity firms that are observing what's happening with healthcare private equity and veterinary private equity. I think it's important not to view that as necessarily limited to those types of private equity and think through how your own strategies may be affected going forward. And the last one I'll give is I think the FTC's focus on labor markets is really, really significant. I just alluded a minute ago to the proposed rule that would ban non-competes, but it really goes beyond that. We are certainly seeing labor market considerations play a much greater role in merger review. And now, earlier this month, FTC Commissioner Bedoya made public comments about worker misclassification, so classifying workers as independent contractors as opposed to employees, and arguing that that can be an act of unfair competition under the Federal Trade Commission Act. So I think companies should be very attuned to these issues and be on the lookout for the continued march of antitrust theories into the realm of employment and labor market regulation generally.
David, what are you seeing around the corner?
For me, I guess I'd say two things that seem to be converging somewhat. First of all, artificial intelligence, and secondly, information exchange. Artificial intelligence is affecting every facet of life, and we don't really know what the technology is going to be capable of 5 years, 10 years, 15 years down the road. People are excited about it, but they're also very nervous about it. And at this point, from an antitrust law perspective, it's just not clear whether the current antitrust laws are going to be adequate to deal with whatever the technology develops. Some of the concerns are surrounding potential collusion issues arising out of artificial intelligence use by companies. There are potential concerns about the use of artificial intelligence and big data to dominate certain industries. And I think it's going to be a very interesting time for the antitrust laws over the next few years as the agencies and other governments try to figure out how to deal with it. Insofar as information exchange is concerned, this is actually tied into the artificial intelligence issue because the advent of artificial intelligence makes exchange of competitively sensitive information possible in ways perhaps that are new. And there seems to be an increasing focus and concern about that. That's compounded somewhat by the agency's recent withdrawal of the longtime safe harbors for the exchange of information and what's always been really much more benign view of bare information exchange as opposed to collusion. So those boundaries are getting muddier. And I think as we move forward over the next few years, the challenges in that area are going to be very important for companies to understand and for us to provide guidance on.
Thank you. And I'll wrap it up by mentioning three things. First, I see increased activity in the future by state attorneys general. The bill having been passed, it passed for a reason, so that state attorneys general can act and keep their cases in their home jurisdictions. The second thing I see is how cases are being teed up for Supreme Court decisions, and particularly the FTC has identified four cases that it wants to see overturned in a way of precedent. It'll be interesting to see how these cases matriculate their way to the Supreme Court and how future cases, for example, on pharmaceutical pricing, make their way to the Supreme Court. And the last thing I'll say is I see pricing issues everywhere. It just seems like, despite the fact that there's a focus on market structure and concentration, the end result is pricing, how consumers are affected positively or negatively by many of the things that we've talked about. And for that reason, today is the first podcast in what we are going to launch as a podcast series focused entirely on pricing issues. And when I speak about that, I'm talking about some of the things that have been mentioned here: pricing algorithms, retail pricing strategies, rebates, volume discounts, bundling, Robinson-Patman Act, price discrimination, and consumer protection. So we appreciate all the listeners listening today. Thanks very much.
Thank you for listening to DLA Piper's Beyond the Curve podcast. All information, content, and materials contained in this podcast are for general informational purposes only. This podcast is intended to be a general overview of the subjects discussed and does not create a lawyer-client relationship. Statements and opinions are those of the individual speakers and participants and do not necessarily reflect the policies or opinions of DLA Piper LLP US. The information contained in this podcast is not and should not be used as a substitute for legal advice. No listener should act or refrain from acting with respect to any particular legal matter on the basis of this podcast without first seeking legal advice from counsel in the relevant jurisdiction. This podcast may qualify as lawyer advertising, requiring notice in some jurisdictions. Prior results do not guarantee a similar outcome. DLA Piper LLP US accepts no responsibility for any actions taken or not taken as a result of this podcast.